Binge Mode is brought to you by DirecTV Now. Live stream your favorite channels on virtually any device. Plus, you can subscribe to HBO and start watching Game of Thrones today.
Warning! Binge Mode features adult content.
Much like the show Game of Thrones, about which we are talking. If you watch Game of Thrones and you're fine with it, you'll probably be fine with this podcast. If not, the Ringer NBA show is very good.
And now, Binge Mode.
Do you pray to the gods?
The old and the new.
There is only one God, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death. Not today.
Welcome to Binge Mode. I'm Mallory Rubin, deputy editor of TheRinger.com. Joining me today,
yeah,
now that he's choked down the last of that horse heart, it is Ringer staff writer and your maester,
hi,
Jason Concepcion. Jason, welcome.
It's great to be here. Let's choke down that raw stallion heart.
Jason, we are not looking to make the eight. We are looking to make the 60.
Are we not? Yeah.
The 60. Because we are rewatching every episode of Game of Thrones, deep diving. We're going one at a time. Requisite spoiler warning for all of you out there. We are going to deep dive on the show and the books, okay?
That's right.
But safe space. Everyone is welcome to dance around the moon door with us.
Yeah.
As we discuss season one, episode 6, A Golden Crown.
Crown for King.
All right, Jason, before that turnip cart fades from view,
the size of those things.
Let's take a quick trip down our very own King's Road by offering a brief refresher on what actually happened in this 6th installment.
In King's Landing, Ned is recuperating from his fight with Jaime and the Lannisters. He finds the king and queen at his bedside. Tensions are high between the Lannisters and the Starks, and Robert tries to smooth things over as best he can, and he reinstates Ned as his hand. Ned wastes no time. Once he's back in action, he puts the Mountain and Tywin Lannister on blast following Gregor's attack on a village in the Riverlands. Ned's just brilliant breakthroughs don't stop there. Following Sansa's absurdly hair-centric declaration of love for Joffrey.
Very sweet.
Ned cracks the mystery, shouts to Gregor Mendel of Joffrey's parentage.
At Winterfell, another three-eyed raven dream for Bran. These are picking up in frequency, definitely something to watch. After that, back in the real world, Bran tests out his new saddle that the homie Tyrion was kind enough to pass along the designs for. But nothing is ever smooth or safe for these people. Right. So as soon as he gets out there riding around, he is accosted by a group of wildlings, including our girl, Osha, finally in our lives. Of course, Robb and Theon not far behind. They kill the wildlings, take Osha prisoner. And Theon, not missing an opportunity for a little pep talk, a little awkward tension with Robb, really pushing Robb to start preparing for war with the Lannisters.
At the Eyrie, Tyrion manipulates Lysandra, granting him a trial by combat after bribing Mord into letting him out of the sky cells and also explaining the transitive property of currency to Mord. Bronn stands as his champion, fights dirty, and wins. Lysa is forced to let Tyrion go.
Meanwhile, in Vase Dothrak, Dany, as you've heard us mention already here, we're very excited about it, eats that raw stallion heart, really chows down. Part of a Dothraki pregnancy ritual, and reading the omens, the crones declare that Drogo and Dany's child, not just your run-of-the-mill baby, guys.
Rhaego.
The stallion who mounts the world. Prophecy. Prophecy is entering our world here. It will continue to stay in our world in a meaningful way. Of course, not everybody's happy about this. Viserys.
What is he happy about?
Not ever. A chill dude. Not a chill dude. Felt left out. Didn't get his piece of the stallion heart. Falls into one of his trademark jealous rages. Later, drunkenly stumbles into the feast. You can't do that. There are rules here.
That's right.
He draws steel. You can't do that in this city. Demands the army that he was promised. Getting a little repetitive here with his requests. And bit of a miscalculation because Drogo honors his request by pouring molten gold on his head and killing him.
Aha! Do you hear those bells?
I hear them.
Those bells will toll whenever a major character has passed away. In this case, Viserys Targaryen. Third of his name.
Viserys' betrayal of Dany, of propriety, of the sanctity of a meal, gets us right to this episode's big idea. So let's cut to the core of it. Let's stick it with the pointy end. The defining theme of this episode is loyalty. We hear the word used as a weapon in this episode. We see the ramifications of loyalty lost, of loyalty gained, of loyalty manipulated and muddled. Let's break it down. The episode opens. It's really sweet. Robert's visiting Ned on his sick bed. Cersei's kind of the third wheel, but Robert and Ned have their little, like, I wish I knew how to quit you moment, yes. You know, after Ned had resigned his post as Hand in the prior episode. Robert throws the pin back at him. And one of the fascinating things about the dynamics in this scene is that their devotion to each other,
yeah,
which is really hard to tear down, even when they're the ones trying to tear it down, it's buoyed in this opening scene by each of them sort of pointing out, specifically Robert pointing out, a lack of loyalty elsewhere with right. other parties. So Cersei and Robert are literally coming to blows in this room. They don't have any loyalty to each other. Robert, when he says that Ned should be his hand again, he actually makes a kind of sweet, generous offer
right.
via a threat. Like, I'll pin the damn thing on Jaime Lannister right. is an interesting motivational right. tactic. He knows that Ned hates Jaime. Jaime's men just stab Ned through the leg. And then Robert actually gets to a really kind of deep place here when he says that it's, you know, it's sad, but he never yeah. loved his own brothers. Like, Renly and Stannis do not mean as much to him as Ned does. You were the brother I chose.
You were the brother I chose.
There it is. I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss that when we don't have reasons to quote Robert anymore. And then, crucially, Robert also mentions the one thing that is more powerful, arguably, than loyalty for these people in these situations. Debt. Currency. Yeah. He says that he's half a kingdom in debt to Tywin, Cersei's father, and that he cannot rule seven right. kingdoms if the Starks and the Lannisters are warring. And he's right. He can't.
It's all that currency manipulation
that Mort is so yeah, busy learning about.
No,
a few
go!
Weeks away. And, of course, Ned, typical Ned, he repays Robert's renewed faith in an odd way, denouncing the Mountain, essentially calling Tywin to war. Yep. Pycelle, of course, we know is Tywin. He's a Lannister creature, right? So he prickles, he bristles at what Ned is doing. And Littlefinger never wants to miss an opportunity to be loyal to the objective of moving the pieces right. around the chessboard. One of the things about this scene with Littlefinger in particular that's so amusing is, like, does he think people can't hear him? Like, his little, like, side mouth whisper technique, it really carries in the throne room. And he says to Ned, is it wise to yank the lion's tail? Gold wins wars, not soldiers. Ned says, then how come Robert is king and not Tywin Lannister? Ned, loyal to the end, loyal to a fault.
Also an interesting comment, because one of the criticisms of the Mad King's reign was that Tywin Lannister was pulling the strings behind the scenes, and he right. is now. I mean, the interesting thing about Tywin is he would prefer to be the guy behind the guy. Then there's the Baratheons. Shouts once again to genetics, as taught to us by Game of Thrones, and all of their progeny having black hair, while Sansa is
the seed is strong.
The seed is intensely strong, while Sansa, meanwhile, is only loyal to this kind of fantasy of the handsome prince and this love affair that she wants to have. And her blindness totally obscures Joffrey's true nature to her. Although, to be fair, Joffrey's fooling a lot of people at this time.
Right.
She has this, like, really pathetic, truly pathetic speech where she says, I want him, my golden lion. I'll give him sons with beautiful gold hair. And Arya goes, has that great seven hells.
Arya's reaction is priceless.
Yeah, and priceless. Sansa and, you know, Sansa is this great example of a thing that happens in stories where the more realistic a depiction of a teen is, the more annoying they
sure.
are. You know, like, Arya's this really kind of, like, fantastical character of agency and destruction. But Sansa, I find her to be this really sad, tragic character, because all she wants is the fantasy, the dream.
Love.
She can't have it. It's Ned's fault.
Speaking of things that might be Ned's fault.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about Theon here, right? Ned's ward. Theon's relationship to the Starks, to his own perception of the familial bonds that may or may not still exist with the Greyjoys, starting to come to the fore more and more each episode. Theon is really trying to urge Robb to war to get justice for Jaime's attack on Ned. He says, "You're not a boy anymore," right to Robb.
One of the blood for blood.
One of the most effective motivational tactics in Game of Thrones is telling a man,
"You're not a boy anymore.
You're not a boy anymore. You're not a boy anymore."
You just killed a guy. It's probably his first.
One would think.
Yeah.
Theon really pulls the other guy started it card and then says, "It's your duty to represent your house when your father can't." That is
projecting
an appeal.
Much?
Absolutely. But it's also an appeal to obligation, which is a form of loyalty, right? He's showing loyalty to Robb in a way, even though they have a lot of strained energy behind their interactions in this season. He's showing loyalty to Robb by providing this advice, which he doesn't really have to be doing. But his actual advice centers on the very idea of loyalty. Loyalty to your father, loyalty to your name, loyalty to your house, loyalty to your obligations to act.
Some great foreshadowing here, too, because I think you could argue that Robb's second worst mistake was sending Theon to the Iron Islands as his ambassador and kind of misunderstanding the relationship that his family had with Theon.
Loyalty.
In that moment, loyalty.
There it is again.
Yep. Over in Vice Dothrak, Jorah and Dany and Viserys are all kind of circling around these questions of loyalty. Is it a familial bond? Is it something you earn? You know, Dany earns the respect and loyalty of everyone around her by totally immersing herself in Dothraki culture. And she tries to help Viserys with this, the way she, you know, she tried to dress him in the in the Dothraki clothes. This smelled like manure. But Viserys does none of this. He thinks simply by dint of him being the last Targaryen male that people just need to fall in line behind him. And what happens because of this? He gets mocked. He walks into the into the feasting tent, you know, all drunk. And there's Drogo and his Blood Rider just kind of laughing at this sad, pathetic figure. And he expects Dany to be loyal to him because their family, and he treats her like complete crap, like a pawn in a game. You know, he's loyal to this idea that everything it has been foisted upon his shoulders since the age of five. I'm the last hope of a dynasty moment, the greatest dynasty the world has ever seen, on my shoulders since I was 5 years old. No one has ever given me what they gave her in that tent. Never. Not a piece of it. How can I carry what I need to carry without it? Who can rule without wealth or fear or love? And this is, meanwhile, as he's stealing Danny's three dragon eggs. You know, and it's a stark contrast. And I would also bring up Eri, one of Danny's handmaidens in this. The way she is also responsible for Danny in a certain way. And if anything happened to her, I'm sure you know, Drogo would have her skinned, but there's a real care there as she's concerned that she might have burned herself on that dragon egg. You know, she's like really concerned. And I think it's this is the context for a lot of her Dany's people staying with her at the end of this series.
What do you think it takes to get Viserys drunk? Like half an apple tea? And then he's just done?
It smells like no.
The Viserys Dany interactions, obviously a very rich text, but then there's also the Viserys Jorah exchange.
Yeah.
When, because Jorah's the one who comes into the tent and catches Viserys in the act of trying to rob the eggs. And Viserys of all people has the nerve to play the loyalty card with Jorah. He is literally robbing his sister before he then goes in and threatens to cut her baby out of her belly. Yeah.
You can keep it.
Like, where's your party etiquette, man? Yeah. You can't do that. And he says to Jorah, when Jorah tries to stop him, "You swore me an oath. Yep. Does loyalty mean nothing to you?" And of course, Jorah, looking great, smoldering, beautiful, just glint in his eyes. He says, "It means everything to me."
Yeah.
Because Jorah is, he's not lying. It does mean everything to him. He's just not loyal to Viserys anymore.
Right.
He's not loyal to the person who convention would say he has to be loyal to in that situation. He's loyal to Dany. Loyalty is ultimately the chief motivator for him and, of course, the desire to go home. But it's also, this scene really shows us that loyalty is fluid because he did make that oath a few episodes ago at the wedding. In this world, the thing that matters isn't necessarily the shared history we talked about a few episodes ago. It's how the shared history weighs against the factors in the present, right? Those are always kind of butting heads and at odds with each other. And when the loyalty shifts, that's the thing to track. So Viserys, he has no respect, right, for anything around him. And Jorah has made mistakes in his life, but he ultimately has respect and the desire to return to some sense of normalcy and of clarity. And Dany to him is clarity, right?
It's also interesting that Viserys also kind of has the measure of him a little bit when he says, I see the way you look at my sister.
So Dany has been endlessly loyal to Viserys, right? She's so loyal to him that she actually let him marry her off.
She really tried.
As that piece of meat. She tried. She gave him every chance to not be a piece of total fucking garbage.
Yeah.
But she has found her courage and her sense of self. And that trumps that sense of obligation. She's now loyal to her new family, this new life that she's building for herself. Drogo, the baby, the Dothraki, as you say, her open-mindedness allowed her to make that change. Viserys is completely closed-minded.
Right.
He's living 17 years in the past.
And not a little bit of ambition as well.
Yes.
There's that has been awakened. The dragon has been awakened in her.
Yeah.
And she starts to feel like, you know, I have more steel in my belly than this guy. And I think that's something that comes out as well.
But thankfully not the steel that he was trying to
put
in her belly.
Exactly.
That would have been unfortunate. I also love that just right before he dies, right before it goes horribly wrong
for
him.
That was all I wanted.
What was promised?
What was promised?
He's hanging. What's a promise? What is a promise if not loyalty in a form?
Right.
And ultimately he is robbed of that, which is rich and beautiful. Hey guys, just a quick break to tell you about our sponsor. Binge Mode is brought to you by DirecTV Now. Live stream your favorite channels on virtually any device. Plus, you can subscribe to HBO and start watching Game of Thrones today. And now, back to Binge Mode. Tyrion, let's very quickly talk about Tyrion, because like Robert, I would not say that Tyrion and Robert are similar in too many ways, but they both love a good lay.
Right.
And they both know that money is often more powerful than any other motivator. So when Tyrion is bribing Mord to do his bidding, he is actually positioning Mord to betray basically Lysa in a way. And he's smart enough to realize that people in this world are often more loyal to either their own position or an idea than to actual human beings, so to the person sitting across from you in the room. So he plays on that idea of justice, right? This is when he's out there
This is a masterstroke by Tyrion also.
It is. Is this how justice is done in the Vale? You accuse me of crimes, I deny them, so you throw me into a cell to freeze and starve. Where is the king's justice? I'm accused and demand a trial. We're going to talk more about trial by combat a little bit later in this episode, but we will just say here that Tyrion's plot, his maneuvering at the Eyrie, shows us in a really kind of cool way how loyalty can be a mask, how it can be a tool. It doesn't always have to be genuine. Like the Knights of the Vale, right? They can't wait to volunteer to be Lysa's champion when they think they're going to be fighting Tyrion.
Right.
And they're sort of feigning loyalty so that they can curry favor and enhance their status. Bronn, right? He's smart. Bronn is smarter than most of these other people. He's loyal to the idea of the almighty golden dragon. That is all that you need. And he's pursuing his own advancement. He doesn't offer to stand as Tyrion's champion out of the goodness of his heart or any genuine affection, even though they will develop genuine affection for each other. He wants a buck.
Right.
He wants a buck. And then
Savannis,
your boy.
Quiet.
Cautionary tale.
Yeah. Whoops.
This did not go well for him. What's he loyal to? He's loyal to propriety, right? To fighting with honor. How did that go for him?
Well, he did fight with honor. He did. And he got stabbed in the neck and tossed out the moon door.
Yeah, that's a tough way to go.
Sad day for Sir Vardis. He thought he was just chilling at court.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out that way. Why do you wear, by the way, like, why do you wear that to just walk around?
It's a great question. It's not everybody can have Ned's wool doublet.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make some sort of choice.
Yeah.
All right. So Tyrion's expert maneuvering is, it's about more than just loyalty.
Yeah.
Right. It's also about the laws of the land and specifically the right to demand not only a trial, but a trial by combat. This gambit is something that we are going to see on this show multiple times over the coming seasons. So, Maester, please assemble the conclave. Take us to the Citadel. Teach us everything we need to know about trial by combat.
So a trial by combat is an ancient method of settling disputes. It goes hand in hand with a trial. The important thing to realize about these two kind of forms of judicial process is that they're not for everyone. They're for the nobility. They're for people of relatively equal standing. If a commoner runs afoul of a lord, then it's the lord passes judgment and that's it. Think of Micah the Butcher Boy. He was accused of striking the king. He did. There's no trial. Just get the hound, ride him down, and that's it. Right. Carry him off, throw his body in a ditch. It's not a big deal. With the nobility and lords and ladies, there is a certain structure to the thing. Now, Tyrion plays his hand very well. If he doesn't manipulate his way out of the Sky Cell, he might have been there for who knows how long. Kat could have sent word to Winterfell. They would have sent a ship, and then he'd be in the Winterfell dungeons for X amount of years. He did something very smart. He was able to get into an audience with Lysa where there were many lords and ladies and knights and people of good standing, and he could demand his rights to trial and trial by combat in front of witnesses where she could not refuse it or ignore it. And the fact that if she would have denied that there, she would have brought shame on her house. Now, this isn't always the case. Ned's father demanded trial by combat from the Mad King, and the Mad King roasted him in his honor and in his own armor. Now, you could say that the Mad King kind of sort of allowed the request to go through by creating a trial by combat by which Rickard fought against fire. Or
Fire's the champion of House Targaryen, right?
Yeah, but
flawless logic.
Yeah, but that's not. That's not exactly the case. So that's basically what it is. Trial by combat. You fight, and the gods decide by deciding who wins. Now, if the fighters are too unfairly matched, or one can't fight for whatever reason, or perhaps it's the king, a champion can be chosen. And this is what Tyrion does here. His first move, of course, was to have Jaime be his champion. This is a great move. Assuming that they would have accepted that request because, first of all, Jaime is one of the best knights in the whole land, and it buys him time. He, you know, it would have taken 2 weeks or whatever for Jaime to ride up there.
More time with Mord.
When that got turned down, he had to gamble. And let's just say that Tyrion got extremely lucky in Bronn, a very canny guy who understands how to fight dirty and not fight fair. And this is, we talked about it before, but this, trial by combat is something that we're going to see again and again and again. Why wouldn't someone who knows that they're guilty and knows that they're going to be found guilty just demand trial by combat all the time? Well, first of all, that kind of does happen. Trials, as we have said, are exceedingly rare. This is only for nobles. And moreover, it's only for nobles accused of a crime who aren't in their castle. You know what I mean? Like if Tyrion is in Casterly Rock and he's accused of murder, great. He just doesn't leave the Westerlands or King's Landing or the South and nothing will ever come of it. The fact that he falls into the clutches of Catelyn Stark is what makes this happen. That's why it's so rare.
Okay. As much as we would like to watch the bad man fly.
Make the bad man fly.
It is time to head to the Sept, bathe in the light of the Seven, sharing our seven favorite insights and observations from this episode, lightning round style. Jason, you go first. Number one.
Ah, the stallion who mounts the world. He shall unite the people into a single Khalasar, and all the people of the world will be his herd. We've talked about prophecies in the abstract, but let's talk about who this stallion who mounts the world. Who could it be? Is it Dany? Is it her child that she will have with a certain dark-haired young man who lives in the north? I'm not sure. That's my personal. That if you want to know who I think
the
stallion
is quickening,
who, I think it will quicken. I think she will lay with King John Stark, and I think she will have a child, Eddard Rhaego Stark Targaryen.
Wow, really rolls off the tongue.
And also, this being Game of Thrones, I think they'll hate each other, but they'll put it together for the good of the realm. They won't like each other for some reason.
Will Jon take Dany to the cave and perform the Lord's Kiss? That's the only question that really matters, guys. That's the end game that we need to focus on.
Dany is so much more experienced than him that it's fucking sad.
Yeah, it'll be tender and sweet. Okay, speaking of Dany, number two here. She's not officially the Unburned yet, but she is well on her way. In episode one, we saw when she very comfortably and easily entered the boiling hot vat of water.
Right.
This episode, we see her pull one of her eggs off of the hot coals without marking or damaging her hands in any way. And then, of course, when Eerie touches the same egg, the camera very intentionally pans in on Eerie's hands. We see she is burned. She is marked. Dany, completely fine.
Hashtag retcon, by the way. This is a slight change from the books.
Yes, indeed.
Joffrey, fucking lying coward. He's an inveterate liar. When he has his little meeting with Sansa, "You're my lady. One day we'll be married in the throne room. I'll never disrespect you again. I'll never be cruel to you again. You're my lady now. From this day until my last day." No! "Now let me just tie you to the bedpost and I'm going to aim my crossbow at you."
Wow, you really summed up the whole Joffrey experience quite well right there. That was beautiful. Speaking of romance.
Yes.
Who is the true lord of stringing together penile euphemisms? That's what I want to
know. "I made the bald man cry in the tittle stew."
Is it Tyrion?
Yeah.
Is it Mox from Varsity Blues? Okay, because purple-headed yogurt slinger, that was really the line for a generation
really
of youth. But Tyrion here, he's given us so much to work with. "When I was 12, I milked my eel into a pot of turtle stew. I flogged the one-eyed snake. I skinned my sausage. I made the bald man cry." Then he, of course, can't resist, has to say that he thinks Cersei ate the stew.
That's right.
Which is
and there were gasps.
Pretty gnarly. I'm going to give it to Tyrion, but, you know, Mox is still pretty special.
Tyrion. Economics 101 with Mord. "Sometimes possession is an abstract concept."
Great line.
After Mord says, it kind of frisks him and goes, "No gold." This is Tyrion trying to explain economics and the transitive properties to Mord the jailer is fantastic.
I wish that he had been here to explain volume and geometry, because as you noted, your main takeaway from this episode was Roz and the turnip cart and the sheer size of the turnips.
I think I've become desensitized to nudity and sex because of this show, that now I'm just looking at the sheer size of the produce on that cart that Roz rides. Go watch that and look at those freaking turnips. They are huge.
And I feel like we have to be really clear here. He's not talking about her boobs. He literally means the turnips. Number six here, when Ned is making his big anti-mountain, anti-Tywin speech, "I denounce him and detain him."
Yeah.
Who does he call forward to lead this noble mission? It's Lord Beric Dondarrion. The Lightning Lord, this is the mission that's going to lead Beric to all of his deaths and all of his rebirths and the Brotherhood Without Banners. Of course, the show is going to recast him.
Hashtag recast.
Which, sorry, dude, whoever you were, this guy in this one scene who had one beautiful moment and then missed out on having all sorts of prosthetic scars placed all over you. But yeah, a really early glimpse of Beric long before he becomes an actual important player in the show. Pretty cool.
You know, there's a lot of speculation about potential Game of Thrones spinoffs. Would we do Robert's Rebellion? Could we do the Blackfyre Rebellion? Could we do Aegon's Conquest? Consider this our official plea for the trials and tribulations of Robert making the Eight.
Would watch.
"Have you ever made the Eight, Barristan?" "I don't believe so, sire."
Oh, Robert. What a guy. Well, Jason, Robert really loved to sheath his sword, you know?
Whoa.
And so does the winner of this week's Champion's Purse, an honor that we give out each episode to the person who played the game the best, advanced his or her cause in some tangible way. This week, it can only be one sword sheather. And it is Tyrion. We will very quickly dote on him a little bit more.
This is the first of his 15 titles.
So great.
he manipulated his way out of the dungeons. If that had not happened, who knows what could have went down. He managed to somehow land Bronn as his champion. He told the world that Cersei once ate his this is a Dothraki word for chicken jizz. Reminded everyone that the greatest warrior in the realm is his brother.
Yeah.
He shamed his enemies into allowing the trial to go through. And those looks between Lysa and Kat, where Lysa can tell that she's being maneuvered into something and kind of looks to Kat like, is there a way I can get out of this? And Kat's like, no.
Right. And one of the things that's amazing about the scene is that his achievements actually extend far beyond what he even perceives or realizes at the time. Because, of course, as long as he is a hostage,
right,
Ned is safe.
Yes.
He's not a hostage anymore. So that's bad news for everyone else who's an enemy of his family.
Catelyn Stark, why are you so bad at everything?
You know why? Because she, unlike Tyrion, is not a good judge of character, right? That's the other thing that he shows in the scene is, like, how did he know on some level that Bronn or someone else would step up? Because he put the work in. He talked to Bronn. He observed that Bronn was the one at the end of the crossroads who stepped up and said, yeah, you can have my room. I'll take your coin.
He knows
that Bronn is an ambitious man and that he can use that ambition to further
his ends. Look at who his family is, and this guy gives you an idea of the how power imbalance can play into a trial by combat. If you do some dirty work for Tyrion, now all of a sudden you're in with the royal family.
Right.
You know, who knows what you can get out of it? A castle? Maybe? Tower?
Man.
Riches?
What's Mord up to now?
Lannisters always pay their debts, and they're about to be on the throne.
Great stuff.
Well, Baratheons, but we all know. Look at that hair.
Look at that hair, man. Guys, we have given you what was promised, and we hope that you had as much fun as we did. We also hope that you will join us again next time when we will be discussing season 1, episode 7, You Win or You Die. That's a doozy. It's one of our favorites. We're really excited to talk about it. Until then, remember,
fire cannot kill the dragon. Rago.
You hungry? You want to go grab a horse heart?
Yeah, it's delicious. Rago sounds a lot like ragu.